want to say is again, as to the existing home there, after one, like the roads there are very terrible. I came up with a tire holding in my hand because those potholes damaged my car. I don't know how we're going to do it. And other roads that are also more terrible are the ones that join in Mpumalanga and Limpopo, which I see here that you are saying you've shifted some of the 92.4 kilometers road from Limpopo to Mpumalanga. I'm trying also to understand whether those roads are going to be fixed up or not, because they are a very problematic way, because along the road, as I continue to drive at about 20 kilometers an hour, I could see other people stuck on the side of the road without stable tires, all of them having those problems. And I've quite asked around there, but I also discovered that it's been long that these roads are like that. If Minister can be also be given an attention to the fix, that would be very much appreciated. The other issue, Minister, is in relation to the maritime, but the issue of Operation Francisca, that you're going to get regular updates. Maybe the other aspect that the Portfolio Committee must be given practical, you know, updates, because we always hear this maritime implementation element, but you don't see the practical, you know, example of it. Maybe the other aspect, Honourable Minister, I would request that the Portfolio Committee maybe must be invited to the World Maritime Day that should be hosted in Durban, so that at least ourselves will also have an opportunity, the Portfolio Committee, to have input and engage around those matters. Because we believe that as legislators, we have that particular mandate to be able to get that information, so that you can be able to supervise properly when the department is managing it or not. The other challenge is in relation to program service, that we've noticed that the department is, you know, need to give us probably a high explanation to say, because there's an increase in terms of the allocation of budget, especially in the consultation process, to say what's the reasons behind that. But moreover, you know, you just said you're going to, you know, put a draft design, new strategy, or new taxi recapitalization program. What difference will it have from the previous one? Because you know very well that the previous one has failed. But as well, what budget allocation you are looking at in terms of making sure that this taxi recapitalization work properly? Because if it's not being dealt with properly, we'll find ourselves not being implemented once again, and find ourselves having that problem. The other issue is in relation to the speed budget, the operational services of FRAS. I've taken notice, Minister, that FRAS had been given budget to implement in many kind of particular aspects. But instead of them implementing these things, they always have delays. We're expecting them, this thing of the NOTA has been outstanding for a long time. We're happy that now we've been told that, you know, we can go there, we'll see physical implementation of it. But then, with the aspect that we've got also the regulator, the rail regulator, we suggest that the rail regulator be given more of emphasis of power to supervise the implementation of these programs. Because if you remember correctly, one of the challenges that the rail regulator came and gave us as a portfolio committee, the reason why they couldn't be able to approve the trains, that they said they were too long or too high, is because PRASA didn't work closely with them to approve these trains. So this really tells that rail regulators can given more excessive powers, can be able to find a way of, you know, putting a perfect plan, so that when PRASA implement things, can implement things because they have that particular mandate. Because my view is that PRASA is having that budget, but is not utilizing it. On the last minute, they want to implement these things, and, you know, throwing money into the bin, which is a problem that we must be able to deal with it. But all the regulatory entities, I think I suggest that we find a way of giving them more power to supervise all these entities so they can be able to implement these things properly. Thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson. Mine is just to welcome the new Minister of Transport. I don't want to take you back to the meeting that I had with the Honorable Mstringa before all of you came in here, but we had a meeting. And I think there are no more questions now. Let me first thank the commitment that you showed, Minister. I appreciate more your words that you would like to see value for money on the transfers that you make to municipalities and provinces. Keep to it, please, because there are huge monies that we transfer to the provinces. We want to see, we also want to see that value for money. I again appreciate the presentation and would like to put it forward that it would be good if the department can ensure that our partners from China do transfer skills and build capacity to our local people when they are implementing that project of Mloto Rail. I would also go to the department to say how I wish they can identify their critical stakeholders for them to say when they want to consult, they have a list and be able to say, if I have covered this, it means I have consulted. You see, there's one thing that I have learned during our consultation period on that bill, that the taxi industry people taught me something to say. There's a very big difference between information sharing and consultation. They say sometimes government officials go to them just to share information, what has been agreed, not to consult them. Consultation is something else, information sharing is something else. That is what they said. And I have seen another way I agreed with them. The other thing I wanted to ask is, when we had the Auditor General here, there was a highlight that they want to see their draft APP before it is approved. I was trying to check that if they have got this one, because they want to see the strategies, the targets, whatever. Otherwise, my other questions have covered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and let us all welcome the Minister. In the attention, I assess it for free. That's not enough. First of all, Chair, I want to, there's something that we need to correct, Chair, on page 3, where it says rural development. I think rural, because it's supposed to be corrected. Another chairperson, is something that I want to get from the department, because we have a challenge of mass rolling of driving buses. Do you have any system as a department to actually eradicate the mass rolling of driving buses? Because everybody wants to have a driving school. Everybody wants to have a driving school. And then another chairperson is the one on the issue that Honorable touched on it, of subsidizing of taxes. Because that's why we are not subsidizing the taxes, but we are subsidizing the communities of the old taxes. What is it happening on buses and railways? Because sometimes we find that there's a lot of killing in taxi in there, because there's no help. So what the department can put in place to have that in there. And the other interpretation is that one of I saw something there on page 53, which is actually when you check there on IPTIM, the planning there, what I want to find out from the department, how many districts are they going to engage in this network and planning? Because sometimes if you are talking about this planning, at the same time we have to talk about capacity. We have to talk about capacity. Because most of the municipalities don't have enough capacity to implement whatever the department have or want to be implemented. So what plan do the department have to help those municipalities, to capacitate those municipalities? And another thing, Chairperson, that is what me, that one. Maybe check on page 69, Chairperson. Under transport operation, bullet number 2, where they say the department is not able to replace old contracts. And since 2005, no new services was introduced. What are the planning? Because you cannot say that the department is unable to replace the old contracts. But there's no mechanism, there's no planning to have the situation, because we need to understand what is happening. Chairperson, I think most of my question was captured and taken outside by our other members. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm going to turn the form. Minister, that is a stepping stone. Wants to be destroyed, the sister has been again. I mean, it's correct. So, thank you very much. Chairperson, nevertheless, let's go to the questions. My first question, Chairperson, which is worrying me. Yes, I do understand the response with Maloto Road, but there were issues which we raised earlier about the reviving of railway lines and also railway stations in the Northern Cape, because people of Northern Cape are living where, or else due of unemployment, we're living with those railroad stations whereby they're turning tuck shops and the like. And not for the first time, I don't know how many years, the department is silent about it. Doesn't say anything about the reviving of the railway lines and the railroad station in the Northern Cape.
then also, Chairperson, there is an issue which is worrying me again. With the integrated transport spending program, I think the department was allocated a couple of money for this, even on the 79 million rand, and the department has spent only 18.4 million, that is 70%, in the first quarter. While it was having all these challenges, what is the reason why the other money was not spent? At least the half of it, it was going to be better in the first quarter. And then also, Chairperson, I'm really concerned, the real issue which was raised by my colleagues about the issue of integrated transport planning. I think somewhere there it's like, I just wrote it down and wanted to link it with slide number 10. You see, Chairperson, one or more of the members have raised the issue of, I think Honorable Ramatakar and also Honorable Member next to me and Umama, they said about the issue of PADCO and Golden Arrows. Chairperson, let me remind you that if we recall very well, I think the department is leaking somewhere. Because when you talk about the integrated transport planning, we thought that our focus, we always remind them that we mustn't focus on the cities only. What about in the rural areas? I'll put an example. What expectations do you have in the situation of former Gwangwane and former Gwandebele, whereby the conditions are not the same? You wanted to build the similar structures while the conditions are not the same. For example, you are concerned, you're correct, with where you arrive in a certain place whereby it is detect something like that. It's because the condition, material conditions are not the same. I think we're supposed to come with a method or a system that how to accommodate them. And then also, it is alleged that when they give PADCO contracts, they give PADCO contracts for a long time and Golden Arrows. But when they give those people on the ground their contract, it's a year. And what is the challenge, key fundamental challenge, is that it is alleged also that they are forced to buy buses. Compare the PADCO, the material bus service, with the PADCO service, you see the difference. They are compelled to buy very expensive buses, but at the end, the service which they are given is not the same. And then also, Chairperson, to remind you why I'm raising this issue again. Do you still remember what happened in Pretoria, in Tshwane? The PADCO decided, due to the Department of Transport not longer being financially viable, the PADCO decided to leave some of the roads, but the AutoPAC decided to take the roads. And then, you know, contracts now are accelerated to with AutoPAC by Gauteng Province Roads and Transport. And then my question is that, what will happen if more bus providers leave because of subsidies, which are not enough? And why is the department taking so long time to finalize the review of the subsidy system? So this is some of my concerns. And again, Chairperson, there is a, you know, I'm a little concerned also with this. I mean, in a true sense, we talk about radical economic transformation. I mean, in a true sense, I'll put an example. Chairperson, there is a road in KZN at Sulutjane, which is that beginning from Sulutjane to Kranskop, which is 170 kilometers. That road started some time ago, but it's not yet finalized. Where is the problem? I know that it's a provisional road, and funds are from the national route. And then also, I'll request the minister that one day, let us be honest sometimes, and go to some of these farm roads, the very same people who are bringing food to the table. Some of the roads are horrible. I'll put an example in my area where I'm coming in my constituency. Road number 703, which is from Bethel to Durban, to Crown Road. It's very pathetic, very pathetic. So now it's during harvest period. How do you expect them to bring food? So that is my concern. It's better, I mean, what I'm trying to say, that we must have also a monitoring system. If you give a province money, what is your monitoring system to prove that the money is used, utilized in the proper way, and it gets to the relevant places? And go to slide number 6. Chairperson, on slide number 6, I'm subject for correction from the department. I'm not satisfied there. The language which was used there, slide number 26, where they speak about the Harris-Smith Hub framework, which is not achieved. If you ask the reason, due to pertinent issues needing a political resolution between the Department of Transport and Free State Province, I'm asking myself, who are the political groups? We are the politicians, they're not the politicians. What exactly what they mean? If it needs a political solution, why is it put like that it needs a political solution, why they are not political guru? You see, I'm a little bit disturbed on with this one. And then also, Chairperson, which slide? Slide number 24, okay, they've covered this in the latency rate. Chairperson, I was checking some of the slides. Let me open the slides. Maybe I've got a problem with the chief, the issue of programs. With the issue of programs, I'm subject for corrections. I'll put an example. Let's go to slide number 45. 1.4.4.1. White paper on the roads policy submitted to cabinet. You see, these petty things sometimes they create problems. Because it, to me, it's not yet being submitted. The language which we are using, it's not that one exactly only. There are plenty. This is not yet 2019. But it's written already, submitted to cabinet. I know, can you say, maybe they wanted to say, to be submitted to cabinet by 20 years, I can understand. But if you say submitted already, remember, if we go very well, if we're dealing with the laws, some of these things are very technical, but they mean something. At the end, that's why a lot of people are challenging the department most of the time to court due to this petty mistake. It's plenty, Chairperson, whereby it's submitted 2018. What is that? That's supposed to be corrected. Where it's not an error, this one. I think when I'm about to open it as well. And then coming to the issue, which is raised, Chairperson and the Minister, the issue of denial. To me, it's very touchy, like it's one of our colleagues raised the amount that started from 1 point something billion, and now it's 19. Here is the challenge, here is the question. We need to be briefed clearly, in the sense, you know, I know that sometimes they work with estimations. Like now, they said there's something done on. Of which, last time when we were supposed to go there, we were told that there was something on the ground. When we went there, it was zero.
What is exactly which is there in the note, if I may ask? What is there? Because we can be told that something is happening when we arrive there, already from their own, from somewhere, the trains are not okay, some are bigger than bridges, whatever. What is there already? Because when we are going to debate the budget, our budget now, why do we debate on that one? What is the threat? So, to avoid the thing which was raised by one of our colleagues about the issue of the money which is increasing the whatever, we must be convinced exactly that what is increasing the budget. Musa Zubuya, Chairperson, let me leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. My apology. I first attended the other committee, Small Business Development. And again, let me also say an appreciation to our new minister, that you're welcome and we're happy you are starting to attend the meeting with us, and we hope it will be a good tendency to do such. My question is to the department about the provincial or regional roads which are now being, I don't know, is it adopted by the national, the SANRAL, while there are regional roads. You find now SANRAL is the one which is doing that road, like the road up to first the Punda Maria Road. The SANRAL is busy there, but the regional road, which was supposed to be done by the road agency, POP. The other question is about the department, whether the department has already signed the transversal agreement with the Department of Small Business and Development for that 30% benefit to the SMEs and cooperatives as per the 2016-2017 SONA. And also repeated again on the zone of 2017-2018 that there will be 30% from government procurement to the small business and cooperatives. Whether the department has already signed the transversal agreement with the department. The other question is about the risks identified. So maybe in the next future it will be good if those risks identified, they must be also be tabled in the per financial year and per percentages so that we can check whether the mitigation strategies are remedying the situation, not to repeat it again. So that we cannot each and every financial year see the same risk jangling around the document, so that we can see this risk was here on the previous financial year, the mitigation strategy worked, or the mitigation strategy didn't work, so that we can apply the other strategy. Thank you. Let me stop here.
you very much, the Minister is pressed for time, and I'm not going to be talking or asking questions, but just to say that, Minister, I think I'm happy because we are raising the issues of BRT. It becomes very important. You can't have this strategy which is implemented in very different ways, in different institutions. It's very important that we have a strategy that gets implemented in a particular way, and I think these are some of the things that we really need to align so that we are able to know when we talk about their bus rapid transport in the Republic, we know that this is how it's going to be, how it's been dealt with. And I would also like to say the grants that are being allocated on roads to the provinces, we should be able to see value for money, we should be able to quantify. And I think part of the things that really needs the department really needs to do is to make sure that even before the grant is given, there is the submission of project proposal, so that we are able to go and monitor those projects that this particular province has said that we are going to be doing this kind of a maintenance. And I'm talking from experience that when we went to Northwest, on paper, the roads were constructed, the bridges were constructed. But in action, when we arrive on the ground, Kabisa, Dolov. And until today, it's still Dolov. And that is why I am saying, we're making a proposal to you, Minister, to say, let them submit the project proposal of the maintenance that they're going to be doing, so that even us as the portfolio committee, we know that these are the projects in Limpopo that are being executed in terms of the roads maintenance. When we go there, we don't scratch our heads to say what has really happened to the money, because even today, we're still scratching the head. 2015-16 project budget, dollar, 2016-17 budget, dollar. Let me give to the minister.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll respond to a few issues that need my attention, and expecting the GLS team to respond to the rest of the issues. Thanks again, Chairperson. I think we'll have to get the report on the BRTs meet the municipalities at our level, make an assessment, and then bring the report here. Because amongst others, I think Comrade Ramatakano was saying that we might have to come with them here. I don't think there is a problem. We'll invite them. Or you can invite them directly, because they are a CEO of government. I think the committee should invite them, because it will be difficult for us to invite them. So if the committee invite them the next time we come here for specifically on the BRT, no problem. So what we'll do, because we're going to have a meeting at the 19th of May or so, these are some of the issues that we are going to raise sharply. Salka is supposed to attend the meeting. So we'll get the report out of all the municipalities that are supposed to implement, and we'll take into cognizance the observations that we have made in various areas. And as you have correctly said, BRTs should not come to push out operators who have been there, be it taxis or a small bus operators. If such a BRT comes, we'll have to stop it and take the money somewhere. BRTs will come to complement what is there. It should not come and be used as an excuse why we can't issue out more licenses to small operators. When I was in Park Station, there were so many operators there who came to me and openly said, look, we are operating illegally. I was with the two MECs, MEC Bati and MEC Kosimaluwa, and the president of Kantabu, Mr. Typhon. And they say, look, it's our source of income to operate taxis. We even go to an extent of using roads along the farms and along villages to reach places as far afield as Giani, Sando, Mafikeng, and other areas. They said that publicly. And I requested the two, in particular the MEC party, to explain how to issues out licenses, which has to be fair, transparent to everybody, so that the public is satisfied on about our system. So the issue of BRTs in particular, we'll have to go back and do a thorough assessment with the provinces and the municipalities. I think Honorable Ramatakane has been raising the issue of my city and the other church, Roy Church, where you say the licenses of small operators have been bought out. And I've raised the issue of Mpumalanga, for instance, Honorable Sibanda, terminals at, in Mombela. And they were talking about building another bigger one in White River. So they will have to convince us why is the one in Nelspruit not fully functional, and why do they think a small town like White River can absorb another bigger terminal. I think what we'll have to do, Chairperson, we'll make sure that we are strict on the transfers. If it borders on it, taking us very serious steps of not transferring money, we'll have to do so. And if there is a tension between the two spheres, there is a mechanism of delivering that tension. And that also goes to the issue of the roads, the money for road transfer. We give them the money, but the problem at the service level. Different provinces, different service levels of roads. The roads that Honorable Khadebe was talking about, and the road that Honorable Spanda is talking about. The DDG responsible for roads this year is also sitting in Sandra. When we met Sandra last week, we indicated that Sandra cannot absorb all the roads that are dumped at them. They will reach a stage where they will collapse, literally. We have agreed that if provinces want to transfer certain roads to Sandra, they will transfer that with the budget. We'll cut the budget from national government. You want us to, you want Sarah to take a 100-kilometer road, we calculate. It costs so much, 500 million. So in the grant that we're giving to Eastern Cape, we minus. Because you don't want to give us liability, but you don't want to give us the assets. That's the problem. Every time provinces have got problems, they come to Sandral and dump roads there. And Sandral, from the look of things, is not going to sustain that, let alone because, you know, with the tolling system, there's underpayment. The projected amount that has to be paid are far much lesser. And if the trend continues like that, that system might literally collapse. So we'll have to engage seriously with provinces that we are not going to take new roads unless money will come from somewhere, unless that province agrees that it will have to share its part of budget. So we'll discuss this matter very seriously. So in a minute, chapter. Also, the report on the implementation of Operation Pakistan, as it's required here from problem to do that. The issue of the Chinese partner, we are raising this matter very sharply with them, because sometimes you find when they are part of the project, they want to come not only with professionals, but even with general staff members or workers there, and that the project does not implement, I mean, create jobs for local people. I don't think we'll allow that. It will create problems for us. Because when we were there last week, the road project can only create 12,000 jobs over the MTSF, and the rail can go up to 90. And you know the rail will not be implemented in the next year or so. But on the road project alone, there are 58,000 people who have registered to look for jobs there on that road project. And we can only absorb 12,000. So you can see that the pressure is very high. So if on the rail project the Chinese come with a flight or a ship full of Chinese nationals to South Africa, there will be a very serious problem. There will be people who revolt against us. Because every time you go there, they say, the president was here. Why are you here? You are not the president. You must come and tell us, when are you implementing this project? We want jobs. The issue of subsidy, I think DG will talk to that. When we met Santaco, they raised the issue of the taxi subsidy very, very sharply as to when are we implementing that. I don't think we have a problem. What we'll have to do, Acting DG, is to submit a memo to cabinet, and they give us money to implement, so that we don't make it our issue. So it's not a Department of Transport issue. It's a matter that affects the public in general. Also, in the main, the taxi industry transports so many people on a daily basis. And this also is linked to the bus subsidy. You are correct that those who have been benefiting over the years cannot continue to benefit to the exclusion of the new entrants. So when we talk about radical economic transformation, what are we talking about when it comes to the bus sector? Like the acting DG has spoken about the Mloto corridor route. Part 4 alone gets 605 million. And sometimes they use that money to buy buses which they take to Soweto instead of to Mloto. You know, you have been there, members of parliament. People say that there are buses where they pull up the umbrellas when they're inside the buses, or they can see the road when they are in the buses. So the money that we give them, they take the money to somewhere else. So we'll have to look into that as to whether that route can be shared amongst many participants. The other issue that we are going to review seriously, that route, the permit was given by Gauteng, whereas it cuts across three provinces. It's Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo. We'll have to take a decision as to what we do in a case where a particular license cuts across two or more provinces. Why this issue that where the buses end, or whatever they call it, that's the province that must allocate the license. And according to what I heard from the DG, PATCO has that license from 1997. It's 20 years now, and of late it's almost like a month to month. So it has to be reviewed seriously. The same applies to Northwest Star, and the same applies to Golden Arrow. So I think when we come back in the next meeting, we'll have to come back with a clear plan as to what are we going to do in that regard, and how are we bringing new and small bus operators into the mainstream. The political solution, as I've said, will make sure that in the MINMEC will do something about this matter so that we are not having to be continue to have unnecessary tension with the provinces and municipalities. I'm going to meet the MEC of Free State on the Harris Smith Hub and the N1 and the MEC of Western Cape. There is a tunnel there which I'm told if we don't do anything so soon, it will be very dangerous to drive through it because it fumigates some gas which by the time you reach the other end, you might be dead. And to demolish it, it will take lots of money. And you know Western Cape has taken us to court on the issue of the toll road. So they don't want the toll road, but they want us to go through the tunnel. And so we'll have to agree as to how do we go about that tunnel project. The maintenance plan raised by the chairperson as we transfer money to provinces, and you give examples of Northwest and other provinces and the experience of corporate support. So we'll raise these issues, and we're taking these matters very seriously, Chair, that in the next engagement, like we did today with the Mloto Corridor report and other reports here, we'll come back with a very detailed report as to what is going to be done.
Thank you very much. We will recuse the minister. You will just speak out as we are continuing with the responses. Mr. Mukoraya, can you, because I was thinking that you're going to be joining the minister also. Can we make it within the next 15-20 minutes? The responses, maybe some of the responses which are still outstanding, we can get them in writing to the committee secretary. If
thank you very much.
So agreeable with the portfolio committee. Yeah. Okay.
Chair, we can even do it with less.
Okay.
And then we will get an indication of which are outstanding, and then we can provide.
No, that's fine.
We always do, Chair. Chairperson, the any grant money that goes to any beneficiary is preceded by a project plan. So I think the issue is adhering to the plan in the main, and that then talks to where we need to factor in stricter monitoring mechanisms. Sure, I have 30 questions, but yeah, we will do it. So I don't think I need to talk much on them a lot. I think we have ventilated the issue, except to say 1.1 million was the initial allocation, as reported, and then after some detailed designs, the amount over the period went to 3.7. But the 1.1 in the main did the maintenance, the improvement of street lighting and related issues. And then the amount mentioned in the zone is 4.5 over the period. That is the total amount for the three portions of the road, in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Gauteng. That stops there. It's not 4.8, it's 4.5. And then the 3.7 talks to Limpopo, Mpumalanga. If we do Gauteng, then it will rise up to that 4.5. Okay, we have just mentioned, and I think the emphasis earlier on in the AG's presentation of that, identify your key areas. So in the IRPTS, we will do regular monitoring of the 13 cities, but the 7 in the main are your key ones where already operations either have started or are about to start. So that is the emphasis on 7. That's not necessarily mean we will skip the others. Chair, we have noticed the issues about the subsidies. The answer is simple. Chair, more money, we will subsidize more. We are developing a subsidy regime. We are focusing on the user, as we always say, not the mode. Unfortunately, we have this long contract. But we have tried, and the provinces have tried, when they introduce new services, when they introduce new routes,
they definitely do focus on small and medium sizes. Now, this issue around the Moroto PIPCO contract that has come to an end, I've indicated that we now have a pretty good idea of what needs to happen. Unfortunately, all of it, and this assessment has been happening since 2002, but every time we do the design, it comes to additional funding, and then it does not come. The funding requirements increases, we don't have money, but we have to maintain the road. But any new ones, we have always made sure that we target the new players. It is in our interest that we also bring this monopolies. If you look at it, in each province, there is one and at most two big players. I don't want to mention them, but the province, including Basco in aspect, it's a big player, it's a monopoly, because it has been having the contract for a very long time. So, I think that is, but we will share the plan. We had wanted to take it, not we had wanted, we will take it to cabinet. Once approved or agreed to or supported, we will share with you the plan. The plan is very simple. It talks of a differentiated approach. The solutions we do in the rural areas is not necessarily the same solution we do in urban areas. But we are not compromising any quality. I always use an example that where I come from, Hamasheshad, we don't need a BRT. We need a quality bus service. And this is what this so-called turnaround plan talks about. Unfortunately, again, it comes at a cost. So everything that we've been doing, as now as we are sitting here, if we were to cover the country, we need three times the current level of investment that we are putting into the system. And that is why we say we are going to revisit the streams. We want to believe that BRT might not be the solution in the 13 cities. You need to scale down in certain areas. And this is where we are going. But we are new and we are aware, and this is why we told the cities that you are causing this country a lot of money, and you are not moving an inch. We have about 100 kilometers of BRT trunk and about 500 kilometers of feeder services. But we're already spending excess of 28 billion. That is too much. We need to review this. Not that we will compromise or cut or whatever, but we need to review. There are smaller cities that do not necessarily need your hard BRT infrastructure. When I say this, they say I'm a BRT basher. But perhaps we need to take these bold decisions just so that we invest wisely. Chairperson. The why do you put KPIs to 2019? Unfortunately, the projections have been made as far back as 2015 when we did the strat plan. So we're keeping on course with them, but the annual target that talks to what we do in a particular year. So perhaps, yes, you can look at them and see if they cannot be accelerated. But this morning, we have demonstrated quite a number of them that we have already achieved, some of them way before time. And that is why we've even removed them out of the ABP. And we are still going to have many more that are completed ahead of time. These 15 memos I'm talking to that are going to cabinet, if all of them are approved, the majority of the things, even those that we say we will achieve in 2018 and 2019, we would have achieved them before time. And this also talks to this issue. I think it is the English, it's just an English issue, Chair. A KPI is basically a desired outcome, because it's outcome-based. It is what you would have wanted to achieve at a particular future state. And this is why we use the word submitted by 2019. So it is not a mistake. I think I just wanted to put that one. It is written in that format in terms of the template, and we take cue out of the template that we are gave you. It does not necessarily mean that it is done already, but it means that by 2019 we should have submitted or approved or developed. But that is how our learners cohesive and strategic plan tell us to then do them in terms of the template. District municipalities IPTNs, we are doing two per year. Big, but we believe that, see, remember, we are not necessarily supposed to be doing them. The municipalities are supposed to be doing them themselves, but we are supporting them, and then we are piloting. So we are doing two district municipalities. Now, it is true, the capacity to implement the plans is not there in municipalities. One of the programs, which is not here, but we are doing it anyway, is to train interns and place them in district municipalities. Every year we send no less than 9. Unfortunately, there is no capacity to absorb them even after we have trained them by those district municipalities. And then there's no new PTOG services. Yes, what are your plans? Like I said, the transformation plan and the improvement and the breaking of municipalities. We've been writing documents. And now I think the minister has just given us a go ahead to say, go again to cabinet and request more money. Because we know what we can do. If we can have the money, we will do it. We know exactly what can be done. On the BRRR, we've got reports on Operation Fajita, is there. We've got the review report on the TRP. There was a question, what does it entail? What is the improvement? There are quite a new issues that are an improvement. One of the issues was that the money is not enough to enable people to go and invest in new vehicles. So improving that money from 82,000 rand to 124, which is a movement from around 20% of the price of a new vehicle to around 40, or even more. So those are some of the issues that we are putting there and putting in place. If PATCO and the others leave because the money is not enough, there is very little we can do because we don't have enough money to assist. So where we can, we intervene with the likes of Autopass. It does not necessarily mean Autopass is there for making money. It is also losing a lot. Even if they want to get out of the Mamelodi, but you are forcing them to stay because at least they are government entity. But they are not making money on that route. So an improved investment in the transport system is what is ideal. I think the minister is talking about Stellenbosch and Kranskop route, what the process to take over provincial route, which when it does not come with money, as is always the case, then the burden on Sanlam is huge. Danota, Chairperson, Danota will be completed in June, and we hope to get the first train out around October. So meaning then that we are at the finalization and doing touch-ups onto the structure because June is just next month. We have noticed issues around the BRT is not standardized. In the meeting we held with the cities, we told them about the concerns from this committee. Perhaps it would be good that we come with them. As a chair, give yourselves a whole day because all of them need to present their reports that we are told are not so clear. They have to come and account because it is also our worry. We really want to see a lot of movement. I mean, I don't know what happened to the impetus that was there about a year or so ago. Have you signed the MOU with the Department of Small Enterprises? We have not signed the MOU yet. but the effort used to participate to ensure that we also subscribe to government policies in relation to empowerment of small and medium-sized enterprises. But the 30% aside is now law. The regulations have been approved as of 31 March. So even without an MOU, we are obliged to implement the 30%, which is a movement from the initial 20%. But we also know, Chairperson, note that there is also a procurement bill that has been discussed. And it also brings more reforms into the procurement system, at least for public goods and services. My colleagues will help me if there are others, but again, if there are those that are still outstanding, we'll gladly provide responses in writing. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Going to get that will be responding. I think we're running really behind schedule. We have AXA that must come to them. Yeah, there's a proposal here from members of the committee that maybe we should take AXA and the rest of the remainder of the outstanding questions can be brought back tomorrow in writing. So that members, if there are follow-ups, they can be able to deal with the follow-ups. Mr. Litwan.
Thanks, Chair. I think we'll do that.
Thank you very much, Department. Gigi, are you going out alone? Okay. We'll excuse you. Let's get started. Break and then we come back while they are setting up from Prasa. From AXA. I'm just looking forward to meeting Prasa, that's why I
is it Prasa coming tomorrow? Why? I'm here for you.
Oh, okay. I'm protecting them from all of you.
Thank you.
You can't run it with the clicker.
No, I tried to. Only one time.
My name is Yakula Smilane,
and leading the delegation as in my capacity as a board member as well as the chairperson of the audit and risk chairperson. I will introduce the delegation from management of AXA. We have Mr. Bongani Masebo, the CEO of AXA, the acting chief financial officer, Mr. Jack Kuhn, the company secretariat, Mrs. Sakikane, the chief of staff in the office of the CEO, Ms. Kundi Sebe, as well as the group manager in charge of stakeholder relations, Mr. Mpilo Dlamini. Without going into detail of the strategic plan, I wish to reiterate that the board remains focused on supporting the nation in achieving the objectives set out in the Vision 2025, notwithstanding the challenges in the environment, such as the recent downgrade, we are optimistic and have faith in the management team that the business will continue to perform well. There's been a tariff that has been promulgated last year, and the business was anticipating the reduction in the tariff, and we have adequate plans for it. We are proud of the significant accolades that AXA has achieved, and I won't go into detail of the accolades in the interest of time, but I will highlight the achievements AXA has. There were achievements in Skytrack Award, as well as in the Airport Council International, which is the ACI, Airport Service Quality. The Airport of AXA received a number of awards. SCI World Governing Body Leadership, Mr. Bongani Masebo is the current Vice President of ACI, and he'll soon be the President of ACI from the 1st of January 2018. And there were achievements by AXA on the on-time performance results for airlines and airports, and in the IMF Global Competitiveness Index, AXA achieved the highest score of 6 out of 7 and is ranked 10th in the quality of air and transport infrastructure. And I also like to highlight the world rankings of AXA as part of the achievement. Cape Town International Airport improved from position 22 to 19 of the world's top 100 airports. King Shaka retained the 35th spot, and OR Tambo is the 37th best airport in the world. As part of the key socio-economic development achievements of AXA, I highlight two. AXA has signed a partnership with the Best University, the Molokong Project, which is an incubation program for 100 youth who are unemployed and are potential IT entrepreneurs over the next 3-year period. Also, AXA is supporting a number of schools within the 3 kilometer radius of PE, as well as East London Airport, which is Caesar High School, as well as Walmer High School. And the objectives of this intervention by AXA is to improve performance from an average of 20% to over 90% within the next 2 years. While noting and applauding what has been achieved to date, AXA is looking forward to a positive year ahead, and I will now hand over to the CEO and the CFO to present our strategic document. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Masebo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think last year we presented our strategy called Vision 2025. And so I will not go into too much detail with regards to that. I would just like to highlight some of the areas that I think we need to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee. So largely our strategy still remains to run airports both inside and outside of South Africa, both within AXA and outside of AXA. So that also includes airports in South Africa. Equally, we plan to develop airports. We are doing some work in that regard in Ghana, and we are looking forward to partnering with the Kenya Airports Authority and also with the Airports Authority of Cameroon. And with regards to growing our footprint, that really is a duplication of what we are currently doing in India and what we're doing in Brazil. There are a number of tenders that we are responding to, which relates to running airport concessions. Our sustainability framework still remains largely unchanged. It really speaks to the people, our people in society, our business environment, and our economic environment. I think an accolade that the chair of ARC did not mention, which we have recently got, is we have received ACI carbon accreditation for 4 of our 9 airports, and we hope to continue that as part of our strategy 2025. Sorry, for the people who are who have received an earlier version, this version is just a summary of the version that we have. So what I will do is I'll try and run through this, and I'll be happy to take any questions so that there's more interaction. We thought it might be more productive to do it that way. So we still remain with our 5 building blocks for success, and that is really our governance framework and operating model. Having been around for the last 23 odd years, we've taken a look at how we are positioned as a company to respond to opportunities in the ever-changing global environment. So we've really changed the structure of the organization and the reporting line. Business digitization really speaks to responding to IT, which is an integral part of our business, and it has become more and more a component of air travel, so we want to be able to respond to that. I've spoken about our environmental sustainability framework. We also would like our supply chain management to be able to respond to the evolution of our business. And as we presented last year, we have quite an extensive strategy on economic transformation with regards to who we transact with inside our business. Our KPIs I will not go through, but these are really the KPIs that we have adopted that respond to our strategy 2025. And these you shall have seen in the corporate plan. I'm more than happy to respond to any questions that are specific to the KPIs. Just in terms of the governance and operating framework, or the governance structure, this is really just an indication of the top leadership structure. Reporting into the board, we've got various board subcommittees that are responsible for oversight and strategy guidance. And we've listed them there. And then we've really largely reflected the executive structure of the organization. Does somebody want to ask a question? Oh, okay. We also have then spoken about the board entities, and that's in the broader pack that you have. And the shareholders compact, which we enter into on an annual basis with the Department of Transport. And as part of governance, the board does conduct what is called a board evaluation, and that is switched alternatively. Sometimes in 1 year it is done by an external party, and in the following year it would be done internally. And it really just evaluates the effectiveness of the board. Economic regulation, the chairperson of Audit and Risk did mention that we have received on the 23rd of December last year a permission determination. So we know what the tariff picture is going to be, and that has brought a lot more certainty into our business than was previously there. And I think it may be also appropriate at this point, or at the right moment, we will speak to how we have planned, how the downgrade status by Standard & Poor's has affected us. In fact, it has not affected us. We are still not able to respond to Moody's because they have not pronounced on the sovereign, the sovereign investment rating, and so we will be able to give a better picture once Moody's has pronounced, and I think that is going to be in June. They haven't shared that timing with us, but we'd be then able to share with the portfolio committee what effect, if any, a downgrade by Moody's is going to have. Safe to say, AXA is currently two notches above the sovereign rating. So if Moody's downgrades the country, we are still a notch above investment grade. So we still remain investment grade, and safe to say, it'll have little impact on our business. However, at the right time, we are prepared to share what information you would like to know about economic regulation. The financial plan, we won't go into detail, but I will now hand over to Mr. Berkuns just to take you through the financial highlights.
Thank you, Chair. These are the financial highlights from the prior year. It's just to, again, reiterate that the performance of the 2015-16 financial year, where their total revenues were 8.3 billion. And I think maybe the only point to highlight here is that our profit after tax was just a little bit below 2 billion rand at that point in time. Again, supported by growth in traffic volumes that we've seen, especially in the domestic market for that particular year. Then when we start to look forward for the next 3 years, and these are some of the forecasts that we have included in our corporate plan, you'll note there that overall we still anticipate quite healthy traffic volume growth. I'll be conservative. See the ranges from the next year to around 2.7% after this year, and then going up to around 4%, which is still fairly conservative within our expectations. Then I think this is the slide that maybe speaks to the financial picture of the next few years the best. You'll note there that following the pronouncement from the regulator in December, we now have certainty regarding our tariff position for the next 3 years, and the introduction of the 35.5% aeronautical charges reduction from 2018 then becomes evident in this slide, where you see the reduction of around, and that decision has around a 1.5 billion rand aeronautical revenue impact. And thus, if you compare the 2017 forecast in the slide to 2018, you start to see lower total revenues, you start to see a little bit lower earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization, and cash generation and lower profitability, having absorbed the impact of the lower tariffs, which, as we have announced when the tariff decision was made, which was duly expected due to the delay that we've seen over the past 2 years in that particular decision, and then you start to see an improvement in our profitability and cash generation over the next 2 years following that decision. I think we're probably not going to go into too much detail around some of these slides. Maybe we can deal with that through the questions. I think maybe to highlight then just maybe again that we consist of both aeronautical and non-aeronautical revenue. The aeronautical revenue that was really impacted by the tariff decision, whilst the non-aeronautical revenue is our business that is more from an organic base. And you start to see, for example, CEO has highlighted certain components of relationships that we are building with international airports authorities or governments, and you start to see an advisory services component to be introduced into our future plans in some of these Northern North revenue slides to compensate some of our revenues. And then overall, maybe capital expenditure. We plan to spend around 4.9 billion rand over the next 3 years. You'll note there that in 2018, the number is still fairly conservative, and this is mainly impacted by the uncertainty that we've had around the regulatory decision. And now that we've got some level of certainty around the revenue levels and cash generation over the next few years, it has allowed us to start to reintroduce some of the capital expenditure plans in our capital expenditure program. It does take some time to introduce them and to activate those plans, and therefore you see low expenditure levels in 2018, but as we move into 2019 and 2020, those levels start to increase, and beyond that, it even still increase beyond these levels. And we do provide in the slides a little of a breakdown of some of those major projects that these monies will be spent on. Yeah, this is exactly the slide that you referred to. You'll note, especially for Tivoli and Cape Town, the new domestic arrivals terminal is due to be delivered. The major project that we're looking at in the next few years is the new runway realignment, and then some aircraft parking stands. And then also at our FAM, there's quite a number of projects, especially the one that's quite urgent is the remote open stands, and then also the cargo developments, and then some projects at Key Shark as well. What is important, though, to note maybe for the committee is that albeit that we are recommencing our capital expenditure program in earnest again following the regulatory decision, we will still not be required to go to market from a debt perspective, and maybe that speaks to the impact of any rating decision that it might have on us from a Moody's perspective, especially since we are rated by Moody's, in that we don't anticipate going to the market in the next 3 years to raise necessary debt. We can still fund the capital expenditure program that we have in our corporate plan at the moment through cash generation, as you can see there in the slide, around 10.3 billion rand. And that even includes the settlement of some debt. Some of our debt does mature over the next 3 years, especially a major prepayment of around 2 billion rand in 2019. And the cash generation will allow us to not only therefore deal with our capital expenditure program of around 5 billion, but also allows us to settle debt during the same time.
But that's what the CEO said, that the earlier version doesn't have some of the issues. We will request them to get a print out of it. He raised it before they start making a presentation. The shorter version doesn't have, does include some of the things which are not included in the earlier version. That's what I meant.
Yeah, but the important version used for finances is excluded in this version. It's not giving too much
money.
Continue with your presentation. We will request that we get the, that being printed so that members can have it.
So, Chair, if I can just respond to that with your permission. I did indicate that the numbers in this presentation are no different from the numbers that have previously been sent. This is just an executive summary in the interest of time. We are more than happy to respond to any question that is in the previous version, but the numbers remain exactly the same. Thank you. So just in conclusion then, before we start our interaction, the strategy is aimed at obviously creating long-term sustainability and value, and we are working to continuously improve the passenger experience. I think the chair of ARC did mention that we pay very much attention to the reviews that we are given by ACI, so that's also something that we monitor as part of our KPIs. And I did mention we are looking at securing new businesses, strengthening our reputation, and continuing to build win-win partnerships with all of our stakeholders that we interact with. And internally looking is, we look at maintaining a high performance-driven team. Our people are our greatest assets, and we must make sure that we continuously invest in them because ultimately they deliver on the strategy. And I did mention earlier as part of the building blocks of our strategy, the digitization of our business. And I did also speak to economic transformation, and we're looking at accelerating those programs together with the sustainability programs. And lastly, I also did speak on reducing our carbon footprint as part of our responsibility to the environment. So again, Chair, that is in summary the presentation. However, we are more than happy to take questions on the presentation that was previously sent. That was the detail that was responding to the information that you requested, and that's why that presentation is significantly longer than this one. But in the interest of time, we can respond to any of the questions.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. I think when if you have to comply with what we sent ourselves to do, remember we requested them to, after sending the APC and the threat plan, we requested everybody to follow the template that we sent to them, and this is according to the template that has been sent. But subsequently, AXA has done a summarized version of the presentation. There we are at the issues that need to be raised with AXA. Okay, Honorable Ramatakana, Honorable Sibande. Can you pass the mic?
Oh, thank you very much. Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let's thank the presentation from AXA. And I think also note the strategy, including the role they play outside of South Africa in terms of their own infrastructure that they are building within other places. I think with that, I think we should compliment that despite all the other challenges, the AXA and the intervention and strategy continue to make sure that the flag is continue flying high. Coming to one or two questions. The one is in relation to the whole predetermined objectives in terms of efficient and responsive economic infrastructure network. I just want to find out in terms of the whole area that contribute in terms of AXA innovation, the whole area that deals with the whole broad black economic empowerment aspect, that particular improving that. The last time we had a conversation, we had there was this question about how are they using space at the various airports to accommodate the particular blessed empowerment, particularly when we speak to radical economic transformation. So I just want to find out in terms of now is 2017, what would be their take in terms of percentage of aggressive intervention and making it possible for that to happen at various airports. That's the one question that I'm asking. The second one also in relation to the predetermined strategic objective. I find the challenge that I always find when I go to the airport, particularly when I get to the airport of Cape Town, particularly when you deal with the whole the operational experiences. I'm not sure, Mr. Maseko, whether the managers who manage the airport floors have a conscious understanding that for passengers to go through the airport, it is not leisure. It's business pressure. For me, what I've
found, and I've been complaining to the people I funded against, is that they enjoy to see, particularly at the pickup point, they enjoy seeing long queues with less people operating the access. So every time you ask why is it like this, they will tell you a story that, you know, there is not enough people to open the other one. It's not enough people, but it's continuing. So if you look at the objectives in terms of the operational experience, and at some point I said to them, you know what, all passengers that are coming through this, going through the in terms of this, are all paying per customer. They already paid anyway, their tickets. They are not just getting something free or making a favor. Now, I don't know in terms of the whole management aspect of that training, because it should be, that's why you have floor managers that are able to respond to the situation when they see the demand is increasing. Now, that's one area which I think we will suffer in terms of if we don't address it. A passenger like me, who is patriotic, starting to walk away and say, maybe let me go to the other airline because he is not receiving what I'm supposed to receive for the Southern Airlines in terms of the AXA as our own. So that's for me, and I think I'm taking long to make the point. But the point here is simply responsiveness. An ability to respond. At one stage, I had to phone the Mr. Masego and say, I'm standing here at the International Airport, but the queue is long, and the people here on the floor, they are not necessarily really paying attention. They don't even really care. Actually, it's like for them, it's okay. It's always like this. So that those are two things for me that are concerned. But generally, I think that they are doing a good job.
No, thanks, Chair. Chairperson, which for me, I find it difficult to accept this report because it feels like we are taken by surprise. Irrespective of the apology that you've received, the matter of the fact that key important issues that are raised, which got figures that you're supposed to look at and engage on, are not in this particular presentation. And it really gave me difficult to accept this presentation. But nevertheless, Chair, I'm going to ask some questions. Chair, I'm trying to check. I've just taken notice that several members of the board are no longer members of the board. Is this board still correcting in terms of its legislation? Are they able to also, you know, execute their mandate as per the Company Act? It really worries me that most of these board members either resigned, either being removed. And I appreciate that we just received also that particular information. But we just need to understand whether they still form a quorum or not. But the other issue is in relation to your enhanced non-aeronautical revenue. I'm trying to understand what's the cause of the low, not meeting the target or low performance there. I can't understand why I shouldn't be able to do that. But the other aspect is in terms of the job creation, that because of the maybe you couldn't be able to reach the target, and the budget, the expenditure budget was like lower with 4%. It really gave me a very serious challenge. I need to understand what went wrong, because I believe that in your initial anticipation was that that's what you're going to achieve. But what went wrong then? Because it seems like all the quotas you couldn't be able to, you know, implement and reach that particular target. And we know very well that South Africa is the country that deals with issues of unemployment, that you must be able to address it. But lastly, Chair, in the one of the other issues in terms of the development, in one of the slides that they've just shown and then it went past, as I'm saying, it's okay, I cannot be able to quote it verbatim, but it speaks in relation to the development in terms of these airports. I know that there was a development in the airport in Oar Tambo that also emanated that a gym for, I think, for the workers or for anybody that wanted to utilize that particular gym as being established. But I also seen that recently that gym has been closed. And I don't know, I think it's more than like 4 months now that I've seen it not being able to operate. But at the same time, they are saying they can't be able to generate other income from outside income. I'm trying to understand what is the reason that it was closed. Maybe if they can be able to clarify for us, one can be able to understand. Because once you put a particular infrastructure, you must be able to utilize it up to its utmost capacity. But if you've got an infrastructure that you just build and then just leave it there to be a white elephant, it's a problem. If you can get a clarity. Yes.
My one is one. If they give us a report, it doesn't have a financial report. It's a problem. That's the starting point. And also, check the fence. I wanted to go to the port. Like, when I was in Bukhade, touched the beach. I will show you something very, which I think, I don't know whether it's a revolution or whatever, in the document which was presented to us. I don't know, because it doesn't have pages, but I would say, there are pages in this. So this is my concern, number one.
Hey,
yes, okay. The document itself, to me, I don't know if it's by omission or supposedly so, I perceive it that there are technical problems. Let me go to the point itself. My honourable member spoke about the members of the boards, whether they still vote. But myself, I'm concerned with the meetings of the board. How many meetings? You can check yourself how many meetings. And also, the meetings were divided here. If you check from slide number 16 in the document we have to slide number 20, and you see the summary of these structures of the board doesn't tally. If you go through the summary of the committees of the structure, you see here they speak about five, but when I calculate, it's supposed to be five, six. Because they spoke here about the audit and risk committee, and remuneration and nomination committee, and social and ethic committee, and board investment committee, and board regulation committee. What about the board itself? The board itself is not mentioned. Why the other side it was mentioned, the board? It's worrying me because the summary must include everything which you got. And again, you see, if you recall very well, Chairperson, we had serious problems with the meetings by Brad, whereby in terms of the guidelines, there is a certain number of meetings you're supposed to hold. But with this one, I don't know how many meetings they have at the court. And it's very strategic because they categorize them into the groups of what whatever. Because my question would be, is voluntarily or are these meetings being paid? If you attend the meeting, are being paid? By some basis, are the guidelines of the meeting supposed to take place of the board? And then again, you see, Chairperson, I wanted to wonder, but because before they did this input, there was an agenda that was given as the background of the AXA itself and their role they played about in the communities of students in the subject for correction. But I never heard him touching the contribution in the provinces, different provinces, because that is a mistake. A lot of people, they focus in. If you talk about the province, they think about the cities only. They don't have a strategy how to uplift and how to market themselves in the provinces. And again, Chairperson, my worry is about the issue of the, I was looking about the issue of the support. What is it? But it's under the impact on people and society. Here you call at the time, as government, you are having a principle of social responsibility. Therefore, here somewhere you spoke about the support on black business and entrepreneurs. May you please clarify us, elaborate more. What do you mean? Because sometimes when we're talking about things, they are there on paper, but practically they are not there. And you know, I wanted to bind with this purpose, so it maybe it belongs to the department, but I'll take it to AXA. You remember, Chairperson, a few days ago, there was a launch of the Santiago airline, something like that, which we don't know what happened with it at the end. So I wanted to find out from them what is their relationship with it. Because sometimes it's not clear, we just put things, but it's not clear what we mean exactly. And I was looking from the presentation of the five. You spoke about five things. Yes, you spoke about the five building blocks. And if you go to number four, which is supply chain management evolution, I don't know whether to take care of Swiss Black's businesses. And if they are there, because they are part of transformation. It's part of transformation. This thing comes and linked with the area on which concern which we raised earlier on about the bus contracts, which culturally, they're there. Every time, similar people are being taken on board. Even with this one, I don't know how many black companies they're referring to. If they talk about black business, if you check here, because here you do have the government, what framework, and the business destination, and barometers, you know. But where are the black businesses accommodated to? And then, Chairperson. Some of these things are a little bit sensitive, Chairperson, because we are the ones who supposed to, at the end, to go and support their budget. But we need to know for us is to give you instruments so that at the end we are able to evaluate you all. But how are we going to evaluate them if we're not giving performance?
Thank you, Chairperson. again, thanks for the presentation and congratulations, CEO Wangani, for being a deputy president and going to be a president next year. So, my question, Chairperson, Honorable Svande has already touched where I wanted to touch in terms of the special board meeting. But however, I would like to touch it a bit. The board meeting, in terms of company law, as you know, is about 4 regular meetings per annum. But here, your board meetings here, 2016, you have 8 special board meetings and 9 regular meetings, which is consists of about 17 board meetings in 2016. And in 2017 already you have 1 regular meeting and 4 special meetings. So we just wanted to know about the remuneration thereof. Is it not affecting the budget? Or maybe did you budget it for extraordinary meetings like what we see here? So the other thing is about the removal, resignation, and replacement of the board thereof. 4 board members were removed and 2 resigned. And we need more explanation on that, because this issue of AXA board was all over on the news the previous year or the beginning of this year about the board, the CEO suspension, the minister. Can we get some explanation on that? And I don't know, there are people here who are permanent board members forever. Because we have Dr. John Lamola, who started to be a board member in December 2012, and Mr. Jill Bosa, 2013. Since 2013, they are board members. And the others have been removed to resign on these 2. Are like untouchable. So the volume, as the Honorable Ramatlakane said, of the passengers in the control of crowd, these passengers in the airport, is very much frustrating. Some of the passengers, they have been left and they missed their flight. And honestly, those guys who are waiting to the gate there, we find them relaxed. Sometimes there is a supervisor desk. I once go to the supervisor guest desk there at Johannesburg or at Tambo and approach the person and approach that I can phone the CEO now. But she rushed and opened 2 more gates. So why they don't see the crowded people and remedy the situation? Why must we first intimidate them to phone Mr. Masaiko for them to do the right thing? So the other question is about the draft regulation for the Airport Company Amendment Act, which was presented by the department. So what role are you playing to fast track this amendment? Because it shows that it can take up out until up December. So what assistant your legal team for the entities doing to assist the National Department of Transport? And again, is it the only amendment which is on the department's desk? Or do you have another amendment? Because the only amendment which was tabled here for us is the only one. So lastly, it's about the radical economic transformation. 30% as per the SONA speech. We have a policy in terms of your procurement, or do you sign any transversal agreement or MOU with the Department of Small Business and Development in terms of empowering the disadvantaged, previously disadvantaged business people and cooperatives? Thank you, Chair. Chair, just the one question that I struggled to read my handwriting. I wrote a question or I just couldn't read what I wrote. Now I realize what I wrote. Back to the, I just want to ask the CEO this question, that the last time we, of course, had through the media was the whole cash heist at the airport. A lot of money was taken away from there. If you could just brief us in terms of what has up to now, what is now transpired. We know also through the media that there was some arrest, the police did some arrest, they were still looking for people. But just the information, but my issue is going to be on the responsible people that were supposed to ensure that certain compliance was adhered to. Just to understand that, because from the part of my other committee, we are very concerned about it. Now that the police committee is very concerned about it. But now that he's here, maybe if you could just share mine, which will help us going forward. Thank you, Chair. On that, when Mr. Maseko responds, maybe also the issue about the vetting of the personnel at the airport. One take note that most of look like lots of subcontracted work, finders, starts at this side, this other one. So the question is the whole vetting aspect, I mean the different vetting, particularly airport being a key point. Basically airport is all of it is a national key point in terms of that compliance, if there is a level of that. Thank you, Chair.
Just two main questions. First is, I don't see anything in your report as well about future growth, projections of the population growth as well as tourism growth and all sorts of other factors that influence airports. If you could just unpack that a little bit more, what have you, you know, should you argue with that? I just haven't seen it all. If you could directly hear, you could see that kind of thing. To accommodate our tourism growth and our population growth, our flying passenger growth. And also, similar to as mentioned before, there seems to be a soft gap or a problem at the actual airports. It's not just our Tambo, I see it's in Cape Town as well, where the length of queues, particularly during peak times, and for example, the other two gates open for searching. And in fact, while I was at this meeting about 10 o'clock this morning, I got a call from a colleague complaining about the exact same problem at our tender. There seems to be some kind of management problem or some kind of gap where the airport is clearly very busy and yet it's not correctly staffed. And I think I'm sure many of the members, I can say from experience, where there are horrendous queues. Particularly during the peak hour, there will only be one or two gates, well, two gates at most, open at one time. So I'm not expecting necessarily to answer that particular question, but certainly to be aware that there is a problem somewhere, that these peak times are not being considered. considered. I'm presuming you have records and statistics as to when peak times occur and so forth. So these things are relatively predictable based on your flights coming in and so forth. So these things will shift to appropriate in the appropriate manner of shifts which should be done as well.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to just focus on three questions. The first one relates to what was well covered in the news around December, January of last year, in fact, but I'm referring to the Skywise issue. There was an outstanding amount of what was mentioned in the news, something like 4 million, apart from another 4 million that was owed to AT&S. Was that money recovered in any way? Or, you know, what is the position around that? That related to outstanding charges of landing and takeoff and parking fees. Second one, I was hoping to see something around the income to AXA, around the shares that we have at the airports of Mumbai and Sao Paulo. I didn't pick up anything around that, and it would be interesting to just hear something around that. And then also, although my colleague alluded to this, this whole union demand and around the meal allowances and so on, and the agreement that was reached, what financial budgetary impact would that have? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sinelani, and your team. We'll request you to respond. You'll respond through your team.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be jumping around a bit, but I hope I get to cover all of the questions. And if I don't, I'll ask my colleagues to jump in. The predetermined objectives, and I think this question was asked by several members, as it relates to economic transformation. We have very specific sectors, long before it was introduced in Kona. We do have transformation policies that speak to the various sectors with which we interact. There are internal targets that we've set for all of the retailers and new transformed retailers that we want to bring into our business. And those are targets that are set and approved by the board. And I'm happy to report that those targets we have met. There are specific economic transformation strategies for the construction sector. I think you shall have heard here that we're going to be redoing the domestic terminal in Cape Town and the runway, and some work at Oa Tambo on aprons and some taxiways at Kinshasa in the May. But we will also be doing some runway work, refurbishment work at our smaller airport. And we've set specific targets around how we introduce BEE. Similarly, around the rental cars, and equally around property development. Now, we had previously, and we recognize that this is a journey. We previously had one broad strategy, but on further analysis, we understood, or we realized that we need to understand the various sectors better. For an example, the construction sector is not the same as a retail sector. So you cannot have one broad strategy for that. As it relates to construction, rental cars, and property and advertising, in the month to come, we will be going out on tender. And again, there are specific sectors that we have set in that regard. I have taken note of the queues at security. I think the members will also be aware that in the year under review, we equally had the transit visa implementation by Home Affairs, and that created its own problems to the extent that we had to make a donation for Home Affairs to be able to recruit additional people over the December period. We do take note of the fact that they are security queues, and at OR Tambo in the main, those queues pretty much start from about 5 o'clock in the morning and go on through the day. And I don't want to sound defensive, but we are experiencing phenomenal growth. This airport here in Cape Town, as part of the AXA group, has realized the largest growth in the AXA group. So it is something that we are responding to, and we must equally get our staff to respond to. So a point to make is that, yes, they are queues, and sometimes they are extraordinarily long queues, but the queues are moving. And the message that we're trying to get out is, this airport is not the same airport that it was 5 years ago. Not only is it difficult to find parking, because the parking lot is full, you equally have to make an accommodation to come to the airport a lot earlier, because it's going to take a lot longer to process. It is work in progress that we continue to do with the airlines, because there's sometimes this misunderstanding that we also man the queues at the boarding gates. We only man the queues at security. And so it is work in progress, and so we have taken note of that. With regards to whether or not the board is quorate, I will attempt to give an answer, and if the company secretary feels it's inadequate or she'd like to add, she's more than happy to. Yes, we can confirm that we have a fully functioning board, and a board that is fully quorate. In fact, in terms of the MOI, the maximum number of board members that we need is 3. And I think the committee will remember that possibly about 5-6 years ago, for about a year, we operated with 3 board members only. So the board is duly quorate. With regards to the job creation KPI, I think one of the things that we spoke about when we mentioned economic regulation was we only got a determination of the tariff in December, which effectively meant that there was only certainty in our business in the third quarter of the financial year. Therefore, why we did not meet that target, amongst other reasons, is we had to put a lot of our plans on hold, because we did not know whether the economic regulator was going to give us a tariff. And so we had to postpone a lot of those projects. But now, as the FD has said, now that there is that certainty, you shall have seen the spike in the monies that we are going to be spending. And we're quite comfortable that we can spend those monies. With regards to the gym, and I'd like to answer this question in tandem with the question around Skywise. As with any creditor that owes us money, if you fail to pay us and you continue to make promises to pay on time, we have to foreclose your business. And this is largely born out of the experience that we had with the airline called One Time, if people remember. I think the company is still in the process of trying to recover in excess of 160 million rand that we were owed by One Time. So I know the argument at the time was, this quantum is immaterial compared to what One Time owed us. Through the guidance of the board, we are much firmer in our appetite to, we have less tolerance to accommodate tenants that are not able to meet their financial obligations. And these are the few that have reached the press, by the way. I think there are probably a total of in excess of 50 creditors that we are monitoring, and these are people that owe us anywhere in between a couple of hundreds of thousands of rands to up to 5-6 million rands. So it is something that we are managing and we're getting better at, and that's born out of the experience with One Time. With regards to the provincial impact as it relates to community upliftment, We did not bring an exhaustive list of all of the areas, all of the schools, all of the communities wherein we have made an impact. But safe to say there's a lot of work that we do around the country that we are currently doing, that we have done, and that we will continue to do. In provinces even where we don't have a representation, in provinces such as the Northwest, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. With regards to the Santaco matter, I don't think any of us are, from AXA certainly, are able to respond to that. We equally did hear that there was going to be an airline called Santaco that was going to start. It never got off the ground. We never really had an opportunity to interrogate those reasons. We equally read what was in the press. With regards to the board members that were removed, that's possibly going to be something that is best placed, is best answered by the department. I think we can safely say that the two major shareholders in Airports Company are the government, which has 74.1% shareholding, and the Public Investment Corporation, that has 20% shareholding. As a result, I know that there was a question around Mr. John Lamula and Dion Botha. Mr. Botha represents the PIC, and his representation is determined by the PIC. And so, with regards to Dr. Lamula, there are equally terms that boards are appointed for, and those terms can be extended. I did mention earlier that we have an annual review of the board and its effectiveness to determine what skills the board needs to be augmented with such that it's a better functioning board. So that happens on an annual basis. So that's why some people you will see being on the board for longer periods of time than other members. With regards to the interaction with the Ministry of Small Business, yes, we have had some engagements with the minister. She has indicated that she would like to understand our programs better, to get an appreciation of what it is that we are doing, and to see how she can augment, how she can assist us further, attract smaller businesses into the AXA business. We are equally working with financial institutions like the banks, to allow for companies that don't have established credit history. If they've won a tender at the airport, then the financial institution should be forthcoming with the financial guarantees. And we are trying to work together, not just with the financial institutions, but we're working together with the Black Business Council. We're working together with a whole host of associations wherein these small black businesses are represented. One, to create an awareness of how you tender for an opportunity at AXA, but two, and more importantly, how we can support you further once you've gotten that business at AXA. Because we recognize that there are things that we could have done better, there are rules that we could have relaxed and not be so stringent, especially on new businesses. But again, I think this is work in progress. This is not a one-size-fits-all formula that we have. And I know that in the state of the nation, the 30% target was set. I think in some instances we've set targets beyond 30%. But I think we must be mindful of the fact that a commercial opportunity at AXA is anywhere from 3 to 5 years. In some instances, can go up to 10 years. So in areas where we've already made those commitments, we can only make a difference when that opportunity is presented again for re-advertising. If I can go on to the cash ties, there is an emerging threat at airports, and that is called the insider threat. And that is really defined by both ACI and IATA. as a threat from people that work in the system, that understand the system, rather than people who are coming from the outside. And on review of the footage, we were very, very clear that this was clearly an inside job. The airport is a very, very complex environment, as I'm sure you will appreciate. But these thieves knew exactly where to go, which container to pick up, and there were a whole host of protocols that were not followed. So there is specific action that we've taken against numerous companies. We will equally be calling on their insurance wherein that is required. But it is quite clear to us that there's absolutely no way that these people could have come in, done what they did, and done what they did in the space of about 45 minutes. If nothing just tied up. Just by way of an example, all valuable cargo is escorted by the SAPS. On this particular day, the SAPS were nowhere to be found. And we believe that had the SAPS been there, it wouldn't have been as easy as it was to have access to this valuable cargo. But what we have said to the police is that treat everybody as a suspect. There are very many entities that work at the airport. I think there are well over 40,000 people that we have on our permit database at OR Tambo. And we said there are many people that do different things. And so please treat everybody as a suspect. We've collected a whole host of video footage, which we've handed over to the Hawks. And we've had numerous meetings with the portfolio committee. In fact, we've had two engagements with the portfolio committee on intelligence. And that's precisely because the capacity of the state is weak to vet over 40,000 people. In fact, it is almost not there. And so we have raised that concern with the portfolio committee, and hopefully they will take that through to their to the intelligence services that report to them to be able to respond. But I think there is also just a general concern that we have raised generally around policing, specifically at OR Tambo, that we've taken that up with the police there. For lack of a better term, let me call them loiterers. When you arrive, there are people that ask you, do you want a taxi, do you need this, do you need that? And these are ideally, when you go to other international airports, you don't get this element of people harassing. And we're saying to the police, but there are so many police officers here, but why aren't they doing their work? So much so that as recently as 3 weeks ago, we sponsored a trip between Access Security and the SAPS to visit 4 airports in Europe to understand the policing model of the policing model at airports like Heathrow, Charles de Gaulle, Amsterdam Schiphol, and Brussels, where they recently had the terror attacks in the public area of the airport. And we are hoping that out of that visit will emerge a new strategy from the SAP side to, together with ourselves, to improve policing, mainly at OR Tambo, but the other airports equally. Just the figures for the passenger growth, we do have what we call a long-term forecast. I think it's a rolling 10-year forecast that we revise every 3 years. For an example, earlier on, so what you see in the APP is a 3-year forecast, but we keep revising that when there are major global events. If you will recall, we had the financial downturn in 2008-09. Now we're dealing with a completely different set of circumstances wherein we've been downgraded to junk. Does that mean our passengers are going to decline? Does that mean our passengers are going to improve? So we must continually revise it. Safe to say
As I mentioned earlier, we are seeing a lot of traffic from Europe that is coming specifically down to Cape Town. We're seeing more direct flights into Cape Town, whereas previously people would come to South Africa or Cape Town via OR Tambo. And so we are responding to this growth in our short-term tactical plans. I do take we have not fully recovered the 4.2 million that we were owed by Skywise. That is still something that we're working together with AT&S. Like I said, we have not fully recovered the 160 odd million from one-time airlines. Take a note of the comments around the India and Brazil investments, and we'd be more than happy to share through the Secretariat how those two investments are doing. Safe to say, when we get involved in these investments, we don't take a 1 or a 2 year view. If you get involved in a 20-year concession or a 30-year, as is the case in India, you've got to take a view over the life of the concession. And if we believe it's a good concession, so 1 or 2 years may be bad, but overall the concession may outperform our business plan. For an example, we did not know in 2012 when we bid for Brazil that Brazil was headed for a recession. Had we known that, perhaps we would have that would have informed our business plans differently. But we are confident that we are able to, and together with the management of Sao Paulo, we're able to respond to the challenge. Excuse me, the economic challenges faced currently by Brazil. Lastly, before I hand over to my colleagues, there was the issue on the cabin crew strike recently. That is purely an SAA matter. It is nothing to do with us. We are obviously impacted in that when people arrive at the airport and they are not being told whether the flight is going to take off or not, there's that added frustration, as was the case with this strike. We try and interact to the best extent possible with SAA because we believe we have a collective duty to the public. If they know that a flight is not going to take off, why have somebody leave their home only to be stranded at the airport? And so that is something that we are working through with SAA. We believe the strike is not over. We have not seen ourselves through the strike, if you listen to the union, but that's something that we're monitoring closely.
I can maybe one or two of the financial questions. I can maybe respond to Chair. So there was the question regarding our ability to have not met the target for 2015 or 16-17 in terms of our non-aeronautical revenue component of total revenue, where the percentage was only 38%, and our target was quite higher than that. The main driver behind that was the delay to the regulatory decision, where previously in our 2017 to 2019 corporate plan, we have anticipated the reduction in airport charges to come through in 2016-17 already, which therefore would have reduced our aeronautical revenues as part of the total revenue component, and thus that would automatically have increased our non-aeronautical revenue as part of the total component. So it's unfortunately something that was out of our control. So the decision that was made in December by the regulator only introduces the reduction in charges in 2017-18. And thus you start to see that change in that the non-aeronautical revenue to aeronautical revenue contribution from that year onwards. There's a comment also made regarding the lower growth between 2015-16 and 16-17 in the numbers that were flighted on the non-aeronautical revenue. We look at 3.8% growth between those 2 years. the CEO has already mentioned an interesting development in our business in that we have seen a change in the behaviors of travelers where they've used Cape Town as an entry point into the country more than in the past, or more than we anticipated in terms of our forecasts and budgets. Now, the one component of that for international travelers coming in directly through Cape Town rather than our Tambo as the entry point is that the retail and offering and the commercial offering is not at the same level that we have at our Tambo, and thus the spend per passenger at Cape Town is unfortunately not at the same levels. And those are some of the activities or some of the changes in our environment that we need to respond to, see how we can respond to that into the future. So that's mainly why we've seen that rebasing of that particular number. Then maybe I can talk to the draft Airports Company Amendment Bill. In that particular respect, the process to getting to that particular bill has been a process led by the Department of Transport through a steering committee and a project team, where we play the role as one of the stakeholders that forms part of that project team. So the other stakeholders as part of that is ATNS, due to the fact that ATNS has a very similar act to the ACSA Act, and the act is also then as an amendment act at the moment. And there, by the way, the economic regulator is embedded in our legislation, so the two legislations need to be dealt with at the same time. We also have the regulating committee part of that team, and we have also two airlines associations. So the Airlines Association of Southern Africa, representing the Southern African airports, are part of that particular stakeholder grouping, and then also the Board of Airline Representatives of South Africa, who represents the international airlines. So all of these parties are represented at this particular committee, so it's a collaborative approach towards the amendments in the draft amendment bill that we believe will reduce the consultation process, and that's our one way of recontributing. And then, so we continue to contribute to that particular process and drive that particular process forward, because it's in the industry's best interest to get the draft amendment bill through Parliament as quickly as possible.
Sorry, Chair, there's just one that I omitted to answer that was raised quite sharply. That was the number of board meetings. Now, you will recall, and my colleague has just mentioned, when we presented last year, there was still a tremendous amount of regulatory uncertainty. And there were certain meetings that were then necessary for the board to have to determine what the next line of march is. Equally, I mentioned earlier that the board had to take some investment decisions around what was happening in Brazil, the board equally had to take some decisions around our involvement in Ghana. So as we seek more and more opportunities outside the continent that specifically require for us to make external investments, we will then need to call for the board to give us guidance. And these are not necessarily planned, and that's why they refer to special board meetings, because certain decisions were required of the board to give management guidance on how to proceed with either an investment or an opportunity outside of the country.
Are there still other inputs that need to be made? Thank you very much. Honourable members, are there other questions? Honourable Sibande, let's get that Mbombo to the Honourable Advocate.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Just one question. As I go through this the presentation, I never saw any challenges or key threats in the company. Does it mean that you don't have any challenges or some threats like UTM?
Chairperson, I've requested
Yes, he'll try to respond about the issue of the board meeting. I also ask about the board committees, because in their paper, this side, it's indicated that, I mean, there is a number of board, the structures which they do have. But at the end, they mentioned about only five. What about the other one? Because to, as I indicated, that when some of their issues are not inclusive, we are having a problem. Then lastly, Chairperson, I'm happy to hear that they have done some study tours about policing at the airport. I'll cite an example which is something very different, very, very strange. You see, Chairperson, it happens one time we were going to Israel, of which those things are not happening in other countries. They are happening only here. Soon when we check out, in terms of your security, which you're talking about, when you check out from South Africa, everything is fine. The interrogation of Israel people starts here, doesn't start in Israel, just at the premises of Aqsa. When you go through, you start with a passport from South Africa, you go to the people from Israel, they started with interrogations. I mean, if it's true that you started, those things must be improved. Because that means if South Africa is nothing, our structures which you talk about, they are there in names. But practically, when you go there, there is a different story.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. It looks like it's gone. I'm going to request the CEO and everybody to respond to the issues that have just been raised.
Chair, let me start with the key risks. Yes, we do have our top 10 risks that we monitor, and I can confirm that we update those on an annual basis. If those need to be forwarded to the committee, we're more than happy to do so. I hope I get this question right, and my colleagues will help me. The board is quorate, meaning all of the board subcommittees are equally quorate. So there is no subcommittee of the board that does not have a particular member. They are all able to function and function normally. Perhaps now I can possibly end by saying we are, the LL issue, it's not the first time that the LL issue is raised. In fact, we had an experience by somebody who came from, excuse me, Palestine recently. However, LL, what happens, what LL does in South Africa is not unique to what LL does in the UK, in the US, and wherever else they fly. They have what they call profiling. And it's not the first time that our country men and women of Muslim religion have complained about the vetting by LL. They have a particular procedure where prior to them allowing you on the aircraft, they have what they call profiling, and they then pull you out of the queue and ask you all sorts of questions. We are dealing at the moment with a particular complaint that has come through. But I'd just like to reassure the committee members that LL, because of the number of incidents, hijackings, bombings of their airline, they have a specific security regime that they adhere to. And that's not just unique. In fact, in places like Amsterdam, Schiphol, they have a unique check-in area that is used by them and them only. And this is an agreement that they were able to reach with the Dutch government, and that they were granted this. There were certain requests that were made of us, but because it does not fall in line with international protocols, we were not happy to accede to those requests.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to the board committees, Chair, we have 5 board committees and not 6. Maybe the honorable member chaired in that the board may be included in every 6 committees. That is actually the board and then the 5 board subcommittees. And then there was also another question earlier with regards to remuneration. I can confirm that the budget that the board gets is obviously as approved by the Department of Transport. We're allowed 2 extra ad hoc committee meetings, and any meeting that is, for example, by telecon and less than an hour, we do not remunerate directors to those, other than the ones that obviously the CEO has explained with regards to when we require.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, it looks like you have exhausted the questions. On your behalf, I will request the CEO to provide us with the, would like to know more about the creditor. How much each creditor is owing to the board. That these are the things that we believe we can be able to send through to the committee secretary, so that members can have an understanding of what probably we may take it very light, but to me it looks like it's one of those problems that you deal with on a regular basis, which actually for sure as a committee we also need to say how do we deal with this type of a situation. We would appreciate if you can be able to appraise us with that. And I think we haven't had an opportunity of seeing the shareholder contract that is just about to expire. We would really appreciate if you can also give us that shareholder contract. But the concerns which members have been raising here are about the special meetings. We would also be joyful if you can be able to provide us with a minute of the special meetings that you have held, so that we are having a picture of when special meetings are being held, like you have indicated. Are they really addressing challenging and pertinent issues that you would want to get a decision here now? And it cannot wait for maybe 3 months to pass for you to go and see and be able to have that particular meeting. I think I've represented you well on the issues that were supposed to be raised out of this meeting. If there's something that is missing, we can always interact with the SOE through writing to them and requesting further particulars on other matters that we really believe we can be able to deal with. And lastly, I would like to say the adult members will raise that the challenges that we are seeing between the shuttles, the Ubers, whatever, those little packages which actually get us from airport to our destination. And I think these are some of the things that we wouldn't say to you, give us what exactly is happening now, but we would really also want to engage you to say, look at the strategy as to how can we deal with this, because it is the lives of the passengers that are at stake and threatened here. 2 or 3 weeks ago, we're going to the Judicial Services meeting. We go out of the airport and it's like 3 cars which is going to the same hotel. When we arrive at the hotel, here this couple comes from Kenya. This car has been following us. When we arrive at the hotel, they got hijacked right in front of us with just one shooting in the air, just once, and they took them in front of us. It is really, really very frightening, because like I say, there is insider trading which is happening. Obviously, they knew when they left the international area that there is this couple which is having this kind of thing. And therefore, arrival at the hotel immigrant, they get hijacked. And these are the things which actually are highly, highly challenging. And I think at some stages, we want to have a meeting with the portfolio committee on transport to on police to say how do we deal with this challenge. So we're very excited that we have started to take initiatives to really protect what is rightfully yours within that particular area. But it is definitely threatening for some of these things to be happening the way they are happening. And I think even as part of the transport portfolio committee, the shuttles and every person who actually comes within that kind of a system as the airport, they become a threat because we believe that the airports are national key points. And therefore, as national key points, we expect a particular kind of protocol in terms of security to be happening in that particular area. Because you get people who are touting, coercing passengers to go into their cars. You have all these shenanigans which are in the airport. And like I say, the police in all our airports are really in a laser stare mode kind of a situation. But I think also, honorable members, the question which has been asked on the removal of the board probably will best be answered by the minister because we saw it in the newspapers in the previous minister having to remove the board members, and we have never had an opportunity of saying to them what are the issues here, can we get information, and it will be unfair for the functionaries to be asked this type of a question. We will, through the committee secretary, get this question forwarded to the minister so that he can eloquently respond to that. I think it was a very fruitful day that we have been able to utilize to the best of our abilities. But we'll also say if there's any other information that we believe from the board, from functionaries, we believe that the portfolio committee should be able to be appraised on, we would appreciate that. But we cannot go out of here without recognizing the good things that AXA is doing here within the country and internationally. The accolades that you are always showered with, how I wish you can be able to take the team AXA, put it in Prasa, so that we can be able to deal with the issues in Prasa, or take a team AXA, go and put it in another of the parastatals in the Republic of South Africa which are not properly functional, because it starts with the governance issues in the board, and then it goes across everybody and everybody. It impacts onto everybody, so we cannot really allow a thing. You go and we don't recognize the good things that you are doing. We don't want to say it at the grave side to say, but if I say it, no, we must say it here and now while you can sit here, that we really appreciate what you're doing because you're putting the name of South Africa in on the limelight, and we are happy that we are junk, but you have not reached that stage of being junk. So we really applaud that, and for sure, going forward, we should be able to assist others as to how to avert and avoid some of the things that we are seeing again. Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned. Tomorrow, we'll start 9:30 again.